having a doctor's appointment, but she said as soon as she's done, she will join the meeting.
Okay, as long as the apology is received.
Chairperson, I also formally submitted an apology because I've got another meeting at 10.
Okay, I'm asking Samsa if she's got more apologies.
It's only Honorable Tsege and Honorable Dubuo Peters who is going to be in now, and then she's going to leave for another meeting. Those are only apologies
that I also send mine that I will leave the meeting because in my constituent office I have a program of the GBV which I will not turn it back because it was already there. So I send the message.
Alright. Yes,
I'm saying I didn't get Honorable Stuella's apology.
Okay, she's making it now.
Yes, on our group WhatsApp.
Okay. Alright, so we've got the I think two members who are going to at 10. We've got one member who's not available. She's attending the consulting with a doctor. And the deputy chief whip has also submitted an apology to the staff together with the chief whip. So let's try and finish at 10. If we are not able to finish at 10, we'll have to reconvene the meeting, probably for next year. Because when we deliberate and decide on the matter before us, we need a quorum to be present. So let's continue with the meeting, and I think this next item is the minutes of the 13th of November 2020. Can I put the minutes for consideration? We are not going to go page by page. We assume that members have gone through the minutes. So I'm just going to get submissions if there's anything for amendments, for corrections, mover for approval. Can I hear the members? Okay, nothing on clarity seeking, nothing on corrections. Can I get a mover for the adoption of these minutes? Moved for the adoption. Any seconder?
I'm seconding.
Honorable Suela seconds adoption of the minutes. In the absence of any dissenting view, the minutes are therefore agreed to. Can we move then to the next item? Okay, please, members, just mute your mic. Okay, the next item is we are not going to deal with matters arising. We go to item number 6, adoption of the report of the SONA incident of the 13th of February 2020. Can I get any submission as to correction, addition, amendment? We have circulated this report well in advance, so I take it that members have read the report. In the absence of any hand for correction, can I put the report for adoption? Any mover? Peters, you want to move? I see your name.
Chairperson, before I move, in the paragraph, it's just that I am struggling to get to that point. In the paragraph that speaks to Honorable Sondi, there is a missing two. Something that indicates that, like I've been indicated, I'm struggling to get to that point.
Okay, is that point number three?
When the leader of the EFF objected to the manner, I think it's corrected, Chair.
Okay. All right. Were you moving, Honorable Peters, or you wanted to just raise that question?
I was still reading that. I think it was the order for it was not pursued and something like that. But I think it's not a transmission. But I move.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Peters. Honorable Dihar.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I would like to second the mover for the adoption of the report. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Stock, for seconding the report. Any dissenting view?
Chairperson.
There is a name iPhone. Can you please just rename your gadget?
It's Ndlozi, Chairperson.
Oh, please rename your gadget, Honorable Ndlozi.
Yeah, I will try my best. I've been trying to the rather new thing. Please note the abstence of the EFF.
Okay, the EFF.
Thank you
very much. The report is therefore agreed to. Can we move to the next item? The next item is closing arguments and deliberations on the hearing of the incident of the 11th of July 2019. So the closing arguments will be done by the initiator, the State Mayotte, and the deliberations will be by members of the committee. Maybe before I invite Advocate Mayosu, can I don't know whether Victor is on the platform, from the
yes.
Table?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay, Victor, please just, I don't have, I do have a copy of the rules. I don't know whether all the members have got a copy. Just in terms of the process, we are now supposed to receive closing arguments. And please just talk to us on the next step that we are supposed to undertake after this.
Yes, Chair, we are now in the hearing mode. That basically we are assuming here.
Your sound is not good. I think there is a problem with your line. Okay, try again.
Of the agreement last time, you were asked, now supposed to hear some other.
Victor, you have to speak to the mic.
Hello, Chair, can you hear me?
Speak louder.
And now?
Okay, I think there's a bit of a problem. Either with the gadget you are using or with your connectivity. Let's try you for the last time.
Hello, Chair, can you hear me now?
Yeah, but you are not very audible, eh? What are you using? Eh?
Can Andy speak on the election, on the issue, chair, if you can hear me?
Yeah, you are not very audible. I don't want to risk to allow you proceeding and then the members don't hear what you've said. Andile, are you able to take us through?
Can you hear me, Chef?
Where are you guys? Are you using the same gadget?
Because no, Chef, I'm in the office.
There's an echo where you are.
Let me try to close the door, Chef. Can you hear me, Chef?
Yeah, we can hear you. Let's try. Although you are not very clear, but let's continue.
Okay, Chef. Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the honorable members and colleagues. My understanding, Chair, is that today the initiator will present closing arguments. And of course, if the presenter, which is the initiator in this instance, doesn't find or doesn't arrive at a guilty version, I think this will be the end of it. But of course, if the finding is a guilty finding, of course, the committee will have to deliberate on that. And if the committee agrees with the finding of the initiator, if the finding is a guilty one, my sense is that from an angle of fairness, the committee will have to invite representations in the form of mitigating sort of like factors from the affected members. And of course, that means that the committee will have to convene at some other time next year to consider those. And then, of course, the initiator will have to address the committee on the aggravating circumstances, after which the committee will have to take a decision in terms of what penalty will be applicable or suitable. And of course, you will take guidance there from people. And of course, the committee will have to report to the House. So that's the process. So today, where we're sitting, it's just a question of hearing what the initiator will say in terms of guilty or not guilty. And of course, the committee will deliberate on that. And having deliberated, the committee will have to reconvene sometime during next year. And of course, I think, Chairperson, under your hand, a letter will have to be addressed to the attorneys of record of the affected members, inviting them, if the initiator and the committee agree to a guilty version. So that's the process, Chair.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I just wanted for the members people so that we know where we are and what is the next step. Now, this procedure, members, is in terms of the schedule to the rules of the National Assembly. It's a procedure to be followed in the investigations and determinations of allegations of misconduct and contempt of parliament. So what Andile was talking to us was is number 9 on the procedure to be followed. So we are then going to give this opportunity to the initiator, Advocate Mayosi, to address the committee on the closing argument. I think members would remember that we had to proceed in the absence of the church members and their representatives after they've decided not to participate in the process, citing the reasons that they've cited in our last hearing. And so the committee decided to proceed. So we're only going to receive the closing argument from Advocate Mayosi. Over to you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, I can. I'm sure other members.
Yes, and good morning to the rest of the honourable members. By way of introduction, Chair.
Your video.
Should I switch on my video?
Yes, please. I don't really prefer that people must address us behind their names. I'd like to see who's speaking. Something that I just prefer as a chairperson, and I'm sure that it will apply to members when they come onto the platform. So we can see if who's speaking. Okay, advocate.
Hello, Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, who's speaking?
Victor, Chair.
Yes, Victor?
Yes. I wanted to just to remind you, Chair, that the meeting is broadcast live, so it's important for members or the person speaking on their videos.
Yes, yes. That's why I'm requesting that members must switch on their videos when they come onto the platform. Okay, Advocate Mayosu.
Thank you, Chair. By way of introduction, members will recall that on the 15th of July 2019, the Speaker of the National Assembly referred the circumstances of the physical removal of members of the Economic Freedom Fighters from the mini plenary on Vote 9, Public Enterprises, on the 11th of July 2019 to the Subcommittee on Physical Removal of Members from the Chamber for consideration, and this happened in terms of Rule 7312 of the Rules of the National Assembly. Now, Rule 211 of those rules establishes this committee as required by Section 12(2) of the Powers, Privileges, Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act. This committee is then mandated by Section 12(1) of that Act to inquire into and pronounce upon any act or matter declared by or under Section 13 of the Act to be contempt of Parliament by a member and taking the disciplinary action provided for. Furthermore, Section 12(3) of the Act requires the committee to inquire into the matter in accordance with a procedure that is reasonable, fair, and to table a report on its findings and recommendations in the National Assembly. So in terms of the schedule to the rules of the National Assembly, charges were then finalized against the 16 affected members, and notices containing the charges against them were served by emailing them to both their personal and parliamentary email addresses. The hearing was initially scheduled to begin on the 17th of December 2020. It was rescheduled to begin on Tuesday, the 24th of November. On the 24th of November, the committee considered and granted a request from the affected members' legal representatives to begin the hearings on Wednesday, the 25th of November, due to a health issue that had arisen in relation to their counsel. The affected members were not in attendance on the 24th of November. On Wednesday, the 25th of November 2020, the affected members were not in attendance. Their attorney of record and their counsel were in attendance. After considering whether a request had been properly made for legal representation in terms of the schedule, the committee decided that the contents of the correspondence from the affected members' attorney of record since 11 November 2020 constituted a request properly made in terms of the schedule for such legal representation. The committee then granted the request for legal representation. The committee was referred to procedural and substantive complaints that had been raised on behalf of the affected members in relation to the proceedings as crystallized in a letter by their attorney of record dated the 18th of November 2020. In regard to the procedural complaints, the affected members had exercised an election to submit written explanations in response to the charges delivered to them. They were required to do so on Monday, 23 November 2020. No such written explanations were submitted. Substantive complaints were raised on their behalf in the letter of their attorney of record dated the 18th of November. In regard to the complaint that the procedure adopted by this committee to determine the guilt or innocence of the affected members would not be fair because this committee consists of an ANC majority. The committee was referred to paragraph 23 of the judgment of Lord J in the Western Cape High Court in the matter of the EFF and others versus the Speaker of the National Assembly, case number 21471. Excuse me, 21471 of 2014. In that case, the second applicant of that case in that matter, Mr. Julius Malema, had raised a similar objection. He claimed that the composition of this committee was a basis for perceiving bias against the members of the EFF in hearings conducted against them. The judge disagreed and stated the following: I can perceive no basis for the claim that the composition of the committee is biased, unfair or unreasonable. I remain unpersuaded in this regard. The fact is that Parliament works with committees. It cannot be that each time the committee is given work to do, it passes such responsibility to some other outside body. That would be illegal and untenable. I am informed that the EFF was granted leave to appeal this judgment, but that the appeal was not pursued. Another complaint raised by the affected members in the correspondence to their attorney of record was that the affected members were selectively charged in circumstances where other members of Parliament carried out and participated in the same conduct which is alleged to amount to contempt of court. But, Chair and Honourable Members, I submit that that is not correct at a level of fact that other members of Parliament carried out and participated in the same conduct as the affected members. In this regard, it bears noting that Section 7 of the Act sets out various prohibited acts that constitute contempt of Parliament in terms of Section 13 of the Act. As is evident from the video footage that was presented at the hearing and the evidence of Mr. Mahlangu, Ms. Buroto, Mr. Maliema, the other members from the DA, the ANC and the ACDP did not participate in any of the acts set out in Section 7, which are said to be prohibited acts, and with which the affected members have been charged. Specifically, these members did not improperly interfere with or impede the exercise or performance by the House of its authority or functions in terms of Section 7A. The members did not improperly interfere with the performance by the Minister of Public Enterprises of his functions, and those members did not create or take part in a disturbance whilst Parliament was meeting as stated in Section 7E of the Act. Section 12, subsection 3 of the Act states that before a House may take any disciplinary action against a member for contempt of Parliament, the Standing Committee must inquire into the matter and table a report on its findings and recommendations in the House. This did not occur in relation to the members who were not removed from the House. The committee then, at the hearing on the 24th of November, decided to proceed with the hearings in the absence of the affected members. The legal representatives of the affected members then advised the committee that they had been instructed to withdraw from the proceedings and that their clients would not attend the hearings and give legitimacy to what they regarded as a process tainted by procedural and substantive unfairness. In addition, the legal representatives informed the committee that their instructions were to instead launch legal proceedings challenging the constitutionality of the relevant provisions of the Act and the rules. The hearing then proceeded in the absence of the 16 affected members. The charges were then read in relation to each one of the affected members who were at that stage not present at the proceedings. Chair, judging from what was said earlier, I am led to believe that there may be a time constraint, so I will not read all of the charges against the individual members. That was done during the hearing, in the interest of time. But Honorable Matias faced 7 charges. Those will be found from page 540 of the record. And the following 13 members were then all charged with charges identical to charges 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 of the charges against Honorable Matias. Those 13 members are Honorable Tseza, Chabangu, Langa, Mazingo, Zimohlala, Muntwedi, Mfane, Mtenjane, Paulson, Shembeni, Siwisa, Sondi, and Dito. These 13 members therefore faced 5 charges each. Honorable Shanyana and Komane were charged with 7 charges that appear in their charge sheet in the record, in which, for the same reason, I will not read out, as this was done during the hearing. As empowered by the schedule to the rules of the National Assembly, the chairperson then entered a plea of not guilty on behalf of each of the affected members in relation to each of the charges against them. Then the committee then proceeded to hear the evidence against the affected members. The oral evidence that was called, the witnesses were Mr. Colin Mahlangu, who is the Undersecretary to the National Assembly. He gave oral evidence and responded to questions that were posed to him from members of the committee in relation to his evidence. Mr. Mahlangu's evidence was factual and it was objective and it was corroborated by the record in the main, being the video footage of the events of the 11th of July 2020. He confirmed that on that date he was present in Committee Room E249 during the mini plenary session of the National Assembly that was convened. For the purposes of holding a debate on Vote 9, he indicated that as Undersecretary to the National Assembly, he was fulfilling his regular duties as an officer of the House to provide support to the House and to ensure that the House functions smoothly from a procedural and administrative point of view. In his position, he is a manager responsible for the sittings of the National Assembly. Mr. Mahlangu was in a position to testify to all of the charges as they were framed. He was able to identify all the affected members with reference to the video footage, as well as an excerpt from a photo book of members of the National Assembly, which contained photographs as well as the names of each affected member. The next witness was House Chairperson Ms. G. Buroto. She testified that she was the presiding officer of the sitting on the 11th of July. She confirmed that the Hansard transcript was a fair reflection of the events of the day, and her evidence was with reference in the main to that record. She testified that Mr. Matias, Mrs. Sonyana, and Mrs. Komane ignored her rulings regarding the points of order they were raising. Her evidence further was that when Mrs. Sonyana said pointedly to her, "This man is not going to speak here today," to her, to House Chairperson Moroto, that was a threat. It was a threat to the minister and it was a threat to the House. When the members crossed the floor and approached the minister, she called the sergeant at arms in quick succession because they were charging and she was uncertain as to what was going to happen. She didn't know what their intentions were, whether they would stab him or beat him, against the threat that had been made earlier that this man is not going to speak here today. It quickly became clear to her that the sergeant at arms would not be able to handle the situation on his own, and she then called Parliamentary Security Services. As for the other members who came onto the floor, such as members Mazoni, Papu, Stienhazen, Kaya Makakwa, her evidence was that she did not know why they came onto the floor, but her thinking from what she was observing was that a threat had been made to the minister and they reacted to that. But as she watched these members, they merely stood there, she said. They were not interfering with the business of the day. They were not interfering with the minister. They did not disrupt the proceedings at all, and they went back to their seats after the affected members were removed and the business of the day proceeded undisturbed. After parliamentary services came and removed the affected members, the business of the day proceeded, was her evidence. She also testified that she had witnessed some disruptions in parliamentary proceedings before, but this one was different. To charge at a member standing at the podium like that and to go directly to that member at the podium and disregard everything else is something she hadn't seen before. The Deputy Sergeant at Arms, Mr. Tibelo Madiema, gave evidence. He testified that he was on duty on that day in Committee Room E249, and he observed the proceedings from when they began until the affected members were removed from the House. He was aware whom the presiding officer was referring to when she asked for assistance from the Sergeant at Arms, because he had been present and had observed who it was that was causing the disruption. And then when he went to parliamentary services in removing the affected members from the House, he was able to instruct them as who it was that was required to be removed. He testified that after the presiding officer called for the assistance of the Sergeant at Arms, he got up from his seat and he was approaching when the presiding officer changed her call quickly and called parliamentary security, which then forced him to turn back to call parliamentary security members who were stationed just outside the door. He said that when he saw the affected members approaching the podium, he was shocked and that everything happened very quickly. There were three affidavits that were presented as evidence in the House, and these affidavits were formal affidavits which sought to place before the committee the evidence of the video footage, the Hansard and the Hansard transcripts. I turn now to deal with the specific charges against the affected members. I deal with charges that I call breaches of the points of order, and there were three members that are charged with what I call with points of order breaches. These members are Honorable Matiase, Hlonyana, and Komani. Points of order are regulated in Rule 92 of the Rules of the National Assembly. In terms of Rule 92, Subsection 1, it says that a member may raise a point of order at any time during the proceedings of the House in terms of the procedure prescribed in Rule 66 by stating that he or she is rising on a point of order and calling the rule that they are rising on. Rule 92.2 stipulates that a point of order must be confined only to a matter of parliamentary procedure or practice or a matter relating to unparliamentary conduct as defined and must be raised immediately when the alleged breach occurs. 92.5 says that the presiding officer must give a ruling and may give her ruling or decision on the point of order immediately, or she may defer the decision to the earliest opportunity after that by way of a considered ruling. Rule 92.11 states that the presiding officer's ruling on a point of order is final and it is binding, and it may not be challenged or questioned in the House. In terms of Rule 92.8, no member may raise a point of order again or a similar point of order if the presiding officer has ruled that it is not a point of order or that the matter is out of order. Rule 92.9 states that members may not disrupt proceedings by raising points of order that do not comply with Rule 92. Section 7 of the Act then set out the acts or conduct that is prohibited in respect of Parliament and members. In terms of Section 7A, person may not improperly interfere with or impede the exercise or performance by Parliament or a House or committee of its authority or functions. Section 7B says that no person may improperly interfere with the performance by a member of his or her function as a member. Section 7E prohibits a person from creating or taking part in any disturbance within the precinct while Parliament or a House or committee is meeting. The Act goes so far as to define what a disturbance is for the purposes of these provisions, and a disturbance means any act which interferes with or disrupts or which is likely to interfere with or disrupt the proceedings of Parliament or a House or committee. A disturbance doesn't include an act committed by a member in the exercise of his or her privilege. Section 13 of the Act then makes it clear that the acts that are prohibited in terms of Section 7 and other sections, if these acts are committed, that constitutes contempt of Parliament. Section 13 states that a member is guilty of contempt of Parliament if that member contravenes Section 7, if that member willfully or refuses to obey any rule, order, resolution of a House, or resolution of the House. I turn out to deal with the conduct of the members who committed the points of order breaches, starting with Mr. Matthias. He rose on what he said was a point of order. He did so well enough in accordance with the terms of Rule 92.1. After allowing him to speak, the presiding officer gave a ruling stating that that was not a point of order, it was rather a point of debate. Now, if Mr. Matthias had intended to comply with the rules by which he was bound, the matter ought to have ended there, because Rule 92.11 is clear that the presiding officer's ruling on a point of order is final and binding. But it did not end there. Mr. Matthias had no intention of complying with the rules of the National Assembly. As will be seen from the record as well as the video footage, he continued as if the presiding officer had not ruled at all. He continued with his speech. The presiding officer ruled a second time. She said, "I'm not going to listen to you anymore because that is not a point of order." But Mr. Matthias was unstoppable. He said the minister's failure to respect the remedial actions of the public protector had rendered him a constitutional delinquent. He continued, Mr. Matthias continued, and the presiding officer and him were talking at disrupt proceedings by raising points of order that do not comply with the rule. The reason, of course, that the point of order did not comply with the rule was that it was not confined to a matter of parliamentary procedure or practice. It was not a matter relating to unparliamentary conduct. It simply didn't comply with Rule 92.2. Mr. Matthias's repeated raising of it, his continuation with his so-called point of order in spite of the presiding officer's rulings, was intended to disrupt the proceedings, and it succeeded in doing so. By engaging in this conduct, Mr. Matthias was also breaching another rule, Rule 69, that deals with grossly disorderly conduct. In terms of Rule 69A, C, and D, members may not engage in grossly disorderly conduct in the House and its forum, including deliberately creating serious disorder or disruption, repeatedly undermining the authority of the presiding officer, or repeatedly refusing to obey rulings of the presiding officer, or repeatedly disrespecting and interrupting the presiding officer while she was addressing the House. Members may not persist in making serious allegations against a member without adequate substantiation or following the correct procedure. Now, there's a set procedure, according to Mr. Mahlangu in his evidence, for raising issues of the nature that Mr. Matthias was raising. Mr. Mahlangu in his evidence referred the committee to Rule 85.2, which says that a member who wishes to bring any improper or unethical conduct on the part of another member to the attention of the House may do so by way of a substantive motion, which is then submitted to the Speaker for her consideration. So Mr. Matthias had a remedy in terms of Section 85.2 for pursuing the matters that he was raising and which were ruled to not be points of order. So if he was aggrieved, if he was insisting or persisting with those allegations, that was the proper course for him to follow. But in addition to that, he had another remedy. If he was aggrieved by the presiding officer's ruling on his point of order, he could have subsequently written to the Speaker and requested that the principle or subject matter of the presiding officer's ruling be referred to the Rules Committee. This is in terms of Rule 92.12a. He didn't do so. He didn't invoke any of his remedies, choosing instead to engage in conduct that was grossly disorderly on the day. Now, going back to the Hansard transcript, the presiding officer ruled again for for the third time. She implored Mr. Matiase to take his seat and said, yet again, that is not a point of order. She ruled a fourth time. He simply refused to accept her ruling as final and binding on him. Instead, he complained that his point of order had not been heard out when he had been speaking the entire time. He, in fact, continued to make his constitutional delinquency point yet again. The presiding officer instructed him to take his seat or to leave the house. He elected to take his seat. Mr. Matiase, I submit, his conduct was in clear breach of Rules 92.8, Rules 92.9, 92.11, 69A, C, and D. His conduct interfered with and impeded the exercise by the presiding officer of her functions in contravention of Section 7A of the Act. It interfered with and impeded with her ability to exercise her authority on the day. It interfered, and improperly so, with the performance by the minister of his functions in contravention of Section 7B. Mr. Matiase, in fact, created and he took part in a disturbance whilst the House was meeting in contravention of Section 7E of the Act. His conduct, I submit, constitute contempt of Parliament in terms of Section 13A and C of the Act. And for all these reasons, this committee is justified in and should find him guilty of the conduct alleged in charges 1, 2, 5, 6, and 7 of the notice served on him. I deal with the other charges later in these submissions. But for the moment, I turn to the other members who are implicated in the point of order breaches, which is Mrs. Hlonyane and Mrs. Skomann. So Mrs. Hlonyane enters the scene of parliamentary contempt after Mr. Matiase elected to take his seat. She rose on a point of order. After the presiding officer asked her, what is your point of order? Please state the rule on which you want to raise your point of order. Her response, Mrs. Hlonyane, made it clear that she was rising on the same point of order raised by Mr. Matiase and already ruled upon more than four times at that stage by the presiding officer. Mrs. Hlonyane was doing this in breach of Rule 92.8. In addition, this point of order was ruled not to be a point of order in terms of Rule 92.2. Mrs. Hlonyane's raising of it again was disruptive of the proceedings in breach of Rule 92.9. So she began by saying, Mrs. Hlonyane, Member Matiase has raised that rule, and you, Chairperson, you are not listening. You did not even allow him to speak and finish. This response further put it beyond any doubt that she had not accepted the presiding officer's ruling as final and binding on her, regardless of the terms of Rule 92.11. But Mrs. Lennon didn't stop there. Her intention to disrupt, obstruct, and by any means necessary prevent the business of the day from proceeding was made clear by the following words. This man is not going to speak today. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. We are not going to leave the house. We are not leaving the house, and he is not going to speak today. He's not going to speak. Her conduct fell foul of Rule 69, which prohibits members from engaging in grossly disorderly conduct by deliberately creating serious disorder or disruption, by repeatedly undermining the authority of the presiding officer, refusing to obey rules, and repeatedly disrespecting her, and persisting in making serious allegations against a member without adequate substantiation or following the correct procedure. When parliamentary services were removing the affected members from the House, Mrs. Hlonyane could be seen quite robustly in the video footage as identified by Mr. Mahlangu engaging in a further form of grossly disorderly conduct in breach of Rule 69B, which provides that members may not in any manner whatsoever physically intervene, prevent or obstruct or hinder the removal of a member from the House who has been ordered to leave the House. Mrs. Hlonyane made herself very busy pushing against the movement of members who were being herded towards the exit and thereby physically intervening, obstructing or hindering their removal from the House. By her conduct, I submit, she improperly interfered with and impeded the performance of the presiding officer and her functions. In the exercise of her functions and authority, she improperly interfered with the performance performance of, by the minister of his function, and she created and took part in a disturbance in the precinct while the House was meeting. I submit that she's guilty of contempt of court in terms of Section 13A and C of the Act, and that a finding of guilty is justified for charges 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, as set out in the notice served on Mrs. Fanyana. I turn now to Mrs. Komane, who is also implicated by the points of order breaches. She rose on the same point of order as raised by Mr. Matias. This was in breach of Rule 92.8. When instructed by the presiding officer to take her seat, she flatly refused. She said, no. She continued speaking. The presiding officer again instructed her to take a seat. Mrs. Komane ignored this and she continued speaking. The presiding officer told her to take her seat for a third time and received the same response. Mrs. Komane raised the point of order again after the presiding officer had made a final ruling that was binding on Mrs. Komane and which Mrs. Komane ignored. She disrupted the proceedings by raising a point of order that didn't comply with Rule 92, she deliberately created serious disorder and disruption, and she repeatedly undermined the authority of the presiding officer by refusing to obey her rulings and repeatedly disrespecting and interrupting her. By engaging in this conduct, she took part in a disturbance during a meeting of the House, and that was grossly disorderly. She improperly interfered with the exercise performance by the House of its authority or functions, and she improperly interfered with the performance by the Minister of Public Enterprises with his functions as a member. She made herself guilty of contempt of Parliament in terms of Section 13A and 13C of the Act. A finding of guilty, I submit, is therefore fitting in relation to the allegations made in charges 3, 4, 5, and 5, 6, and 7 in the notice served on Mrs. Komane. And I turn now to deal with the charges relating to the crossing of the floor. All of the remaining members, affected members, are charged with the identical charges in this regard. The identical charges as a sample is to be found on record page 498 in Mr. Ezra's charge sheet. The remaining members were charged with these identical charges in relation to crossing of the floor. Chapter 5 of the rules of the National Assembly regulates order in public meetings and sets out the rules of debate. It's in this chapter that the conduct of the members is dealt with, that grossly disorderly conduct provisions are to be found, and the removal of members from the chamber and the precinct is dealt with, as well as points of order in this chapter. Rule 64D in Chapter 5 provides that members must at all times accord the presiding officers of the National Assembly and members and other members due respect and conduct themselves with dignity and in accordance with the decorum of the House, and they are required to not, during proceedings, pass between the chair and the member who is speaking, nor between the chair and the table, nor stand in any of the aisles or cross aisles, or to cross the floor of the House in front of the benches. All of the affected members did just that on July 11, 2019. They crossed the floor of the House during the proceedings in front of the benches, contrary to this rule. By doing so, the affected members failed to accord the presiding officer and other members due respect as they are required to in terms of the rule, and they failed to conduct themselves with dignity and in accordance with the decorum of the House. On the evidence of the video footage, and as identified by Mr. Mahlangu, each one of the affected members can be seen and was identified crossing the floor in front of the benches during the proceedings, and thereby improperly interfering with or impeding the exercise of performance by the presiding officer of her authority, and improperly interfering with the performance by the Minister of Public Enterprises of his functions as a member. The charges in relation to the breaching of Rule 64D, the crossing the floor provision, appear as charges 1 and 2 in the notices of all the affected members, except Mr. Matias's notice. In Mr. Matias's notice, the charges in respect of breaching Rule 64D appear as charges 3 and 4. But in the action of crossing the floor in this manner, the affected member's conduct implicated also Rule 69 of the Rules of the National Assembly. And that is the rule that I've referred to previously that regulates grossly disorderly conduct. The charges in relation to Rule 69 appear in charges 3 and 4 and 5 of the notices of all of the affected members, except Mr. Matias. In Mr. Matias's charge sheet, the charges in relation to the breach of Rule 69 appear in charges 5, 6, and 7. So the members then crossed the floor of the House during the proceedings. They approached the podium where the Minister of Public Enterprises stood to speak, and they remained there, some gesticulating, doing all manner of things, until they were removed from the House. They deliberately created serious disorder and disruption. They undermined the authority of the presiding officer and disrespected her. Their conduct constituted contempt of Parliament in terms of Section 13A and Section 13C of the Act, in that it improperly impeded or interfered with the minister's performance of its functions, and or improperly impeded or interfered with the ability of the House to exercise its authority. In conclusion, Chair and honourable members, the consequences of the affected members' conduct was, as I've said, to prevent the business of the day from taking place. In her evidence, House Chairperson Buroto made it clear that it was not possible for her to exercise her authority or for the business of the day to proceed, with the affected members conducting themselves in the manner that they did. And indeed, after they were removed, everybody reverted back to their seats and the business of the day proceeded. On a balance of probabilities, the evidence before the committee proves all of the charges against the affected members. The evidence before the committee has not been rebutted. I submit that a proper case has been made for a finding that each affected member contravened the provisions of Section 7A, Section 7B, and Section 7E of the Act, and accordingly, each affected member is guilty of contempt of Parliament in terms of Section 13A and 13C of the Act. Section 12(5) of the Act stipulates that when a House finds a member guilty of contempt, the House may impose any one of the penalties set out there. In addition to any other penalty, I propose, Chair, as has been referred to by Mr. Dejana, that the committee deliberate on the closing submissions I have made to it, and if the committee finds the members guilty as charged, they then be invited to make representations regarding appropriate penalty prior to the imposition of such penalty. Those are my submissions, Chair and honourable members.
Okay. Thank you very much, Advocate Mayosi. Thanks for your closing arguments. And now, members, we are expected to deliberate on the arguments that have been made by Advocate Mayosi regarding that incident that happened on the 11th of February, and to come to a determination. As indicated earlier, if at the end of the deliberations the committee is going to agree with the submissions made, we will then have to invite those members. If we don't agree, it means that is the end of the story, and we will go and report to the House. Now, there are members who have indicated that they may not be able to proceed beyond 10 o'clock. I'd like to find out from the members, because their leaving the platform will affect the quorum. I would like to find out if they are willing to continue to be with the meeting, or whether they would like to leave, as earlier indicated. Honorable Peter? All right, let's start with Honorable.
I'm about to start with my program.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Honorable Peters? Yeah, just mute your mic, Honorable Swela. We did hear you, that you will be locking off soon. Can we go to Honorable Peters? Okay, Honorable Peters is no longer on the platform. Is she still on the platform? It doesn't look like she's still on the platform anymore. Honorable Swela, please mute your mic.
Chairperson.
Can you please mute your mic?
Okay.
Honorable Swela, we did hear you. You are about to join your other program. We have noted that. We just want you to switch off your mic.
Chairperson, can you hear me now? Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you.
I'm saying I'm about to start my program, Chair.
We heard you, Honorable Swela.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. I'm worried, members, that the absence of the members may affect the quorum, because when the decision is supposed to be made, members, I think Victor will have to advise us in terms of the rules. There has to be a certain number of members present when we decide on these submissions that have been made.
Chairperson?
Yeah, let me just finish. I will give you an opportunity. So I'm worried, members, that we may not have the necessary quorum when we get to decide on that question, whether the members charged, we are finding them guilty as charged of having contravened the rules and contempt of Parliament, or we don't. So that requires the presence of members here. So I am gonna ask that the table staff must assist us in terms of that rule. But before that, Honorable Josie wants to intervene. I don't know, the intervention is relating to what I'm raising.
Yes.
Okay, continue.
Thank you. Good morning, honorable members. I think that we should receive this submission in writing. It will make our deliberations efficient. And I think that we must accordingly adjourn the meeting, seeing that there will not be a quorum, and then reconvene the first opportunity next year. But in the meantime, we must get this written, this submission in writing that was made by advocate, so that we're able to deliberate properly. That is my proposed way forward. Thank you very much.
Okay. Peter, are you still on the platform?
Yes, Chair.
Okay. To get the necessary rule, the relevant.
It's rule 162.2. Yeah, which states that a majority of the members must be present when deciding a question before the committee.
Okay.
Which is 6 members.
Okay.
Out of 11 member committee.
Yes, yes, I found that rule. Yeah, we need to be 6 on the platform, honorable members, and I think we are less now. After honorable Peters and honorable Suella left the meeting, we are no longer 6. I think we are 5 now. 5 now. So we are not able to deliberate and to decide on this question before the committee, and therefore we will have to reschedule the meeting so that we can get the necessary quorum to deliberate and to take a decision. It is just for me it's a bit unfortunate that we are not having a quorum. I thought that members would prioritize this committee, given the fact that the matters which have been brought before the committee have been sitting with the committee for quite some time. We're talking about matters that happened, and I think it was in 2019. We're now in 2020. We're approaching the end of the year of 2020, and we have not disposed of these matters. I understand that there were some other delays that happened in the process as a result of the COVID-19 and the lockdown restrictions. But members should have prioritized this so that we can deal with these matters as expeditiously as we are required to deal with them. But otherwise, there's nothing that we can do. We don't have a quorum. And therefore, we have to postpone this meeting, reschedule it to an earliest opportunity next year. We will then liaise and see. We're supposed to come back on the 25th of January. I think, yeah, it's the 25th, if I'm not mistaken. So we will have to do it before then, so that we have at least around 2 weeks to deal and finalize this matter before we get to be focused on other programs of the committees that we are serving in. So that will be the way forward. There is a request that members be furnished with the arguments that have been placed to the committee by Advocate Mayosi. I think it's a fair request. So let's allow all of them. Victor? Victor, please mute your mic.
Yes, Chair.
You want to say something? Your mic is on.
Yes.
Okay. Victor, you want to say something?
No, Chair.
Okay. Just mute your mic.
Okay.
All right. I think there is a request from Spanish with the closing argument.
Yes.
From Honorable.
Yes, Chair. The submissions can be provided to the committee within the hour, really.
All right, so we will then.
But why were they not given in the first place?
Honorable Josie,
supposed to do that.
No, it's litigation problem.
No.
We should have been finished with the statement if it was ready.
Honorable Ndozi, you know you are not supposed to do that.
Are you going to charge me? Are you going to charge me because I'm disagreeing with you and the direction?
I'm ruling you to be out of order, and you know it yourself that you're out of order. Okay, Advocate Mayosi will then make that available through the committee secretariat and to the members, and that will have ample time to those arguments, and then decide on the date in the new year, and then communicate that otherwise, thank you very much. Thank you, members, for your participation in this committee. And I think, in the overall, fairly well attended. We got to know each other already, that was a great interaction. But I would like to take all of the best for the discussion. You must go and rest, members. Honorable Ndozi, you must go and rest. All the honorable members, Merry Christmas. New Year. It has been a turbulent year this year. Experience something that you have never experienced in your entire life. The outbreak of COVID-19. And up to so far, we've dealt generally well with it. We have lost a lot of our colleagues, our friends, our family members to this pandemic. Please take care of yourself. Make sure that you follow all the prescripts for preventing this COVID-19 infection. And stay well. Hope to see you in the new year. And thank you very much, honorable members. This meeting is adjourned.